This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, suicide bombers carry out twin attacks in Uganda's capital, Kampala. And U.S. diplomats are making a first-hand effort to tackle the political crisis in Sudan and Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Ugandan police say suicide bombers carried out twin attacks near the capital's central police station and parliament today. Several people were reported killed and scores wounded in the attacks. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
The suicide bombers exploded their devices at 3 minutes past 10 in the morning and 6 minutes past 10, respectively. Addressing journalists, police spokesperson Fred Enanga said the first attack involving one bomber was at the Kampala Central Police Station checkpoint. He said the second attack involving two bombers was along Parliament Avenue.
We are seeing a lot of bodies shattered, legs have been scattered. And there's a skull, which we believe are for the suicide bomber who attacked the police station at CPS. Then there are also other bodies that have been scattered at the scene between Raja Chambers and Jubilee Insurance.
Police are blaming the Allied Democratic Force rebel group for the attacks.
The hallmarks of the attack clearly indicate that the ADF-linked radicalized groups who still have a desire to carry out lethal attacks on soft targets using suicide attackers and improvised explosive devices are behind these attacks.
Enanga says intelligence indicate these are domestic terror groups. All roads within Kampala's central business district have been cordoned off and offices and business premises have been closed. A fourth suicide attacker, only identified as Mose, was also pursued, shot and disabled, according to police. Enanga says officers searched Mose's home where they recovered an unexploded suicide jacket and other related explosive devices. Two other suicide bombings in the capital late last month injured a total of six people. Calling for public vigilance, Enanga warned that radicalized groups are an active threat, especially from suicide attackers. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Kenyan security agencies are searching for three convicted terror suspects who escaped from a prison in Nairobi yesterday. One was involved in an attack on Garissa University in 2015 that killed nearly 150 people. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The three men escaped from Kamiti Prison, the largest maximum security prison in Kenya. Police on Tuesday arrested seven prison wardens in connection with the escape. Police spokesperson Bruno Shioso says the jailbreakers are still at large and the arrested wardens are helping with the investigation into how the men were able to flee.
So we can just question people when they look out, people information should report with us. Now we are still under active investigations. We also keep to know about what exactly happened. So in the fullness of time, we should be able to share with the public once the investigations are over.
The three convicts include Musharraf Abdallah, who was convicted of attempting to attack the parliament in 2012, Joseph Juma Odhiambo, who was arrested in 2019 at the border between Kenya and Somalia for planning to join the terror group Al-Shabaab, and Mohammed Ali Abikar, who was convicted his role in for Al-Shabaab's attack on Garissa University in April 2015. That attack killed at least 148 people, most of them students. The three men were housed with more ordinary criminals inside Kamiti Prison, which Nairobi-based security analyst Richard Tuta says is a dangerous practice.
The moment you bring together these militants and with all other petty thieves, pickpocketers and all that, it is very easy for them to use the gaps that exist and the security levels to escape. These are people with resources. These are people who are well-trained. These are people with good networks in and outside the correctional facilities. So all those create a very conducive environment for them to escape.
Some terror convicts and suspects awaiting justice have been accused of radicalizing other prisoners. Police spokesperson, she also says, The escape has prompted police to review the handling of terror suspects and convicts.
We are trying to review, working very closely through the multi-agency framework. We're working very closely with the prisons, just to review the security as well, all the prisons, including the police facilities that host criminals.
The government is offering a reward of $550,000 for information leading to the capture of the escape convicts, who they warn are dangerous. She also warned the public against taking the law into their hands. In October, a mob killed a man who escaped from prison. Masten Wanjala had confessed to killing 10 children. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Two top U.S. diplomats are making a first-hand effort to tackle East Africa's twin political crisis before they spin out of control. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Molly McPhee arrived last night in Sudan, where the second coup in 2 years has turned bloody, with reports of at least 8 killed in mass protests over the weekend. The military has been sharing power in a civilian-led government after the 2019 uprising that toppled dictator Omar al-Bashir. But it ousted the civilian side of the Transitional Sovereign Council last month and detained its members. U.S. officials say McPhee wants to discuss a pathway back to civilian rule. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is en route to Kenya for the start of a three-nation visit to address East Africa's stability as Ethiopia's spreading conflict sparks concerns of wider unrest. This is Blinken's first trip to Africa as Secretary of State. He goes to Nigeria and Senegal after his stay in Nairobi. The U.S. urged its nationals once again yesterday to leave Ethiopia immediately. State Department spokesman Ned Price called the warning practical, but not a sign of pessimism. Half of the 70 World Food Program contract drivers who were arrested last week in northern Ethiopia have been released. As Africa records more than 8.3 million COVID-19 cases, the continent continues to suffer from a severe shortage of vaccines. While many high-income countries have already vaccinated more than 75% of their populations, at least 14 African countries have not even immunized 1% of their populations. Fewer doses are expected to be delivered to African countries through COVAX, the UN mechanism of sharing vaccines. Stephen Neri, African Regional Director at Project Hope, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what should be done to deal with international vaccine discrepancy.
On average, about 9% of the population on the African continent has been vaccinated. The next closest region to Africa in terms of vaccination rate is the Middle East, with 44% of its population vaccinated. So how do we address the discrepancy? First, Africa can manufacture and does manufacture vaccines. It's possible and it's done on the continent. It's global structures, governments, and pharmaceutical companies that block access to the intellectual property and rights required to manufacture and distribute vaccines in Africa. So this problem is solvable. We can do the following things, and in many ways, all the things that I'm going to mention here are happening. One is donation of vaccines. Two, make vaccines available at more affordable prices. Three, support initiatives like the African Vaccine Acquisition Trust, AVAT. That's an initiative by the African Union member states to pool their purchasing power. And in this regard, yesterday, Dr. John Kengasong, the director of Africa Centers for Disease Control, announced that Moderna will sell its vaccine at $7 per dose. That's significantly less than the $22 to $37 per dose that it's currently being sold outside of the United States. And four, and this is the one that's really going to help us in 2023 and beyond, is to really support investments to grow manufacturing capacity in Africa, including and especially to, one, push for licensing agreements that allow COVID-19 vaccines that are already manufactured in Africa to be distributed in Africa. And also under the manufacturing umbrella is to put pressure on major pharmaceutical companies to release intellectual property and trade secrets that will allow vaccines to be manufactured and distributed globally, including and especially in Africa.
Fewer doses are expected to be delivered to African countries through COVAX after the UN sharing mechanism announced that it's forced to slash planned COVID-19 vaccine deliveries to Africa by 150 million doses this year. What are the alternative options as millions of Africans continue to pay the price for vaccine hoarding and restrictions on its export?
The number for delivery by COVAX by the end of 2021 seems to be shrinking from the 2 billion doses globally down to the current estimate of 1.4 billion. And remember, even if fully successful across Africa, COVAX will only vaccinate 20% of the population on this continent. In terms of a response to your question, we need to push for African countries to be allowed to produce vaccines on the continent, push for donations, and support other purchasing mechanisms beyond COVAX, such as AVAT that I mentioned earlier. In terms of production, vaccine development is primarily funded by public money, taxpayer dollars from the global north. Biotech and pharmaceutical companies exist in Africa. Their ability to supply the continent is stymied by the controls placed by major pharmaceutical companies on their rights to manufacture. As of September this year, there were at least 12 COVID-19 vaccine production facilities either set up or in the pipeline across six African countries: Algeria, Morocco and Egypt in the north, Senegal, Nigeria in the west, and South Africa in the south. Manufacturing capacity is not the issue. It's the pharmaceutical corporation's monopoly over intellectual property protections that is preventing production and distribution of COVID-19 vaccines in Africa. The World Health Organization set up the COVID-19 Technology Access Pool, which creates a platform for companies to voluntarily donate intellectual property for COVID vaccine manufacture, but it's not working. The last time I checked, the major COVID-19 manufacturing companies have refused to participate.
As the gap between vaccinations in high-income and middle- and low-income countries widens, Project Hope advises against using the global vaccine supplies for boosters in the wake of the highly transmissible Delta variant. Was there any response to Project Hope advice?
145 million additional doses or booster injections have been administered around the world. This number will continue to increase as many countries are now recommending boosters. I just want to reiterate that as the virus spreads, it continues to mutate. We really don't know how the next variant will impact us. The way to stop mutation is to stop the spread, and the best way that we know to stop the spread is through vaccination. So this inequity is putting us all at risk.
That was Stephen Neri, African Regional Director of Project Hope, speaking with my colleague, Mohamed Al-Shinawi. In South Africa, the government says it has enough vaccines to reach its target of immunizing 60% of its population of 60 million against COVID-19 by the end of the year. But it is facing a big hurdle: low uptake of the jabs. The health department says fewer than 30% of the population are fully vaccinated, leaving South Africa highly vulnerable to a fourth wave of the pandemic that is expected to strike in mid-December. COVID-19 has so far infected almost 3 million people and claimed the lives of about 90,000 in the country. Darren Taylor reports.
Medical researcher Mosa Moshabela says populations, particularly in developing countries where information networks sometimes aren't strong, usually need a fair amount of time to adopt new medicines, especially vaccines.
It's just unfortunate that with COVID-19, we don't have the luxury of time.
He says South Africa's shown it has the capacity and the skills to roll out vaccines on a large scale. It now has to focus elsewhere.
What is it that our people need to ensure that we can reach those high levels of vaccination? And that's the demand side of things. We are not very good at it because it requires a lot of engagement on the people. I've always said that if you look at the way we engage voters on the ground, it's quite active in person. And it really mobilizes people. Those are the kind of strategies in South Africa that work for us.
Moshabela, who's head of innovation at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, says the state can't throw pamphlets and TV ads at South Africa and expect it to embrace vaccines. The past weekend, when the health department aimed to vaccinate 500,000 people through its Vuma vaccination campaign, but managed only half of that, shows its PR strategy isn't adequate, says the professor.
That's not good. It's not good enough in terms of the target. However, the numbers are larger than the numbers we saw the last weekend. So it's making a little bit of a difference. I can see how the Vuma vaccination can push us closer to 60% of accepted vaccines. I can only hope that it can be done consistently, it can be done more at a local level, and it can include larger groups of leaders, including other political parties and religious leaders and traditional leaders.
Some in South Africa want the state to be stricter on the unvaccinated. They're praising the Austrian government, for example, for putting citizens who haven't had their jabs in lockdown.
The situation in Austria is unique in the sense that they are already at 67% coverage of vaccination. And so we are nowhere near that. And also, I think that they've got the infrastructure and the policing to be able to regulate this. We can't do that. I still think that their approach is pretty harsh compared to what Singapore is.
Moshe Bela says gentle persuasion is the way to go in South Africa.
In Austria, it's really more about pressuring people to get vaccinated by depriving them. I don't know if this will really work in South Africa, but when we do reach those higher percentages and the infections are still spreading, we will see our policies also adapt. It's still a large percent of the population that is not vaccinated. We need to do the basics first.
Scientists say a small but loud anti-vaxxer movement is also slowing down South Africa's vaccination rate. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A report leaked to Reuters and verified by three sources has concluded that the Nigerian army fired at unarmed protesters waving the national flag and singing the national anthem in October 2020, calling it a massacre. The report says there was an attempt to cover up the incident, including by police officers who picked up spent bullet cartridges and state agencies who cleaned the scene. The report concludes that the army officers deployed to the Lekki toll gate were not fit and proper to serve and recommended prosecuting certain policemen for their actions. A spokesman for the military police and Lagos state government did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Teachers in Zimbabwe are on strike to demand a review of their wages, which has been dramatically eroded by years of high inflation and currency devaluation. From Harare, reporter Kuzai Zenwashi takes a look at the situation.
Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He tells VOA about the action they are mounting against the government.
Yesterday, the 15th of November, we launched the 12-day action campaign, a strike action campaign, where we are trying to push the government of the Republic of Zimbabwe to deliver on one, restoring the value of teacher salaries to the pre-October 2018.
Before October 2018, civil servants were earning US dollar salaries. Then the government switched their pay to the local currency, which had been recently reintroduced. Masaraure explains.
Teachers then used to earn at least USD 520, 540, but they now earn less than 100 US dollars. And we are saying it's unacceptable. The teachers have been reduced to destitute, to paupers. It's not even enough to cover for the basics.
He explains how successful the strike has been.
The first day was a success. Attendance in school just dropped to 57%. 92% of all our members were part of this strike. We're also glad that other unions are joining. We are aware that other unions are still consulting their members to see what is the best way to push for our demands.
Masaraure says there is very little learning happening in the schools. He says even in cases where teachers are present physically, stress has left them absent emotionally and mentally. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
2 days after security forces arrested him at his home, Al Jazeera's television Khartoum bureau chief has been released. The arrest of Al Masalami Al Kabashi, a Sudan citizen, came after tens of thousands of protesters took to the streets across the country to demand a transition back to civilian rule. The editor-in-chief of Sudan's Armed Forces newspaper, Ibrahim Al-Hori, charged that Al Jazeera has published unrealistic reports and released old videos, as well as hosting hostile personalities who instigated strife. Al Jazeera admits it has given prominent coverage to the anti-coup demonstrations, but says it has also aired a detailed interview with top general Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of